The views expressed in our episode are ours alone and do not represent any other organizations. Our episodes discuss internet crimes against children and cases that involve the exploitation of children and may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Yeah, we don't want to do anything to scare your children. That's the last thing we want to do. We don't want to scare anybody.
Welcome back to Catfish Cops, everybody. It is, I think, just after lunchtime now on Wednesday of the Crimes Against Children Conference. We're still continuing to record live as we have been all week. And as it just so happens, I just came back running an errand and I run into Kevin Metcalf, who you and I connected, I think, on LinkedIn maybe a year ago. Right. I've just been a fan following around what you guys are doing. Love the shirt that you have going. You can talk about that. But go ahead and give our listeners just a little background, who you are, where you came from, what you're doing, or what you were doing, and what you're doing now.
All right. Yeah, my background. So I've been around a long time. Went through basic training for the Army back in 1988.
Wow.
I've been doing one thing or another in uniform, in, you know, now prosecutor's uniform. But
okay.
So state, local, federal, military, law enforcement.
Nice.
I was in law enforcement, federal law enforcement here in Dallas, and I left as an only parent.
Okay.
I had my girls for, you know, since they were about 2 and 5 by myself.
Wow.
So I left this and went to law school for some insane reason and started prosecuting. And,
wow.
Yeah, prosecuting really, as at that point, I had over 20 years,
you know, sure.
in one uniform or another.
Yeah.
And being the new guy.
Right.
It was really weird, so I didn't want to just be redundant. I wanted to find somewhere I could add value.
Yeah.
So as a prosecutor, especially you know, back when I started doing that, or even now, people avoid social media and
yeah.
electronic evidence, and
right.
they really don't like cell phones or computers. Or it's getting better now, but that,
sure.
that looked like a weakness that I could fit, you know, somewhere I could fit in. So I took all my experience, jumped in, and started looking at the prosecution of technology-enhanced crimes. And my you know, focus used to be terrorism and, you know, drugs and all the stuff you would think of.
Right.
But, you know, what I found as a prosecutor was how these vulnerable people, and everyday people, even IT professionals, get hit on technology, right?
Yes.
Well, think about children or our vulnerable or elderly.
Right.
They're getting scammed on a regular basis.
Oh, it's a tragedy that what's going on with that.
Absolutely.
It is.
And then you see what happens to kids. You could have a predator in the back seat of your car with your kids on a cell phone or in their room, and
exactly.
you never know it.
Exactly right.
This is unprecedented for parents. There is no guidebook. There's no cookie cutter approach. There's
right.
nothing. We're having to wing it.
Where are you prosecuting?
Well, I'm still on as a prosecutor in Washington County, Arkansas.
So gotcha. Gotcha.
I help out a lot there.
Okay.
It's a great. Great office.
Sure.
It's the 4th Judicial District of Arkansas. They have supported me jumping in to help with cases internationally. So
awesome.
They let me grow this thing, and it's taken off. So.
And so I see you on LinkedIn all the time, and you're in all kinds of different places, mm-hmm. and you're doing all kinds of things. You're there from the sort of educational side of things to, like, just bring people along the way from maybe where they are and where they could be, or what's the main focus of what you're doing?
So the main focus of what I'm doing, everything I do, I want to execute. We want to be able to go and put people in handcuffs, and we want to recover victims.
Nice.
So that's really the focus. How do you do that?
Right.
And in a lot of ways, like, for example, Pakistan. I was in Pakistan in February.
Okay.
And I was very impressed with what they've done.
Really?
They've taken our law, but this is one of the things you have to have when you go to these countries is, what's the foundation? Do you have a framework
right.
here? Because if I'm training investigators and there's no prosecutors and you don't have a framework in place, it's pointless.
We've seen that directly. And Brandon Poore has joined us.
Hey, good to meet you, Mr. Metcalf. It's a great privilege.
He was presenting earlier, and so right. you know, we've been kind of playing this back and forth and just trying to get people squeaked in as we can. And
yep.
and you're a major catch for us. Believe me, we're not the Joe Rogans, but believe me, we. Yeah. We do have a pretty good follower group and listeners,
right.
And so we're all about child protection and just raising awareness and education and everything
yep.
that goes behind that. So
we have great listeners, and what they just didn't see was Tony and Mr. Metcalf speaking and me just sitting down and him looking at me. No, he didn't look at me this way, but I can imagine he looked like, who the hell is this guy that just sat down at the microphone like he owns it?
But we know firsthand what you're talking about because we go all over the country as well, primarily here in the U.S. to train law enforcement to get them. You know, we have all this institutional knowledge and we want to make sure that it's there. And, you know, being a 30-year guy on the cusp of like jumping off the ship to figure out what I'm going to do, we want to pass that along and make sure people are doing it for the right reasons and the right way. But we've also gone international and we've kind of seen the fruits of the labors where you think, okay, well, where are you guys and how does this apply and why can't we do, you know, so it's a huge struggle and we fully understand that. So
it's bad to come in and train and then find out while you're there, oh, you don't have the laws to be able to do this work, right? Investigate this
right.
way. And so we're telling you, like, this is what you could do if you set up the laws in place.
Right. You know, and, you know, Pakistan, they've done it. They actually took our framework in 2018 and put the trafficking in persons framework in.
Wow.
But you know, they're still, I mean, look how long it's taken us and we're still screwing up left and right.
Yes,
we
are
struggling.
Yeah, we are.
So they're trying to learn the lessons from us, but they're still struggling.
Right.
You know, I'm trying to set this up, but I was very impressed with what they've done. And then, you know, now we're coming in working with their investigators and working with prosecution, which their legal system I'm not that familiar with. So it was quite a jump for me to get familiar.
How was the, when you're over in a place like Pakistan, how's the translation? Is there a lot of English speakers or you work? Oh, really? Okay.
Yes.
So I've been to both. I've been to places where there's plenty of English speakers, but I've also had to watch the guy in the booth who's doing the, you know, you're doing it by audio and what I say in English then gets translated. And that's really a struggle sometimes.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of these translators out here are so amazing.
I'm telling you.
When I was in Monte Negro,
I just got back from there. That place was beautiful.
Oh, yes. But we had people from Kosovo, Montenegro, Albania, and the translators were having to go into two or three different languages, and it was a simultaneous translation. It was amazing.
I specifically asked I was just there on vacation, by the way, no training, but I specifically asked a guy who was kind of giving me a tour of the city of Montenegro there, and I was asking, like, hey, what's the, you know, where are you from, and what's around here, and you live here, all these different things, and we were talking about dialect, and he goes, you know, I could be in Bosnia and I could have a conversation with somebody and they will completely understand me, but they'll know right away that I'm from Montenegro or something along the other lines. And he goes, and I may understand 90% of that, and I was just like, that has to be super difficult, you know, to make things happen. But, wow, that place was beautiful.
Oh, yes.
It was beautiful.
When you're talking about laws and sort of the disparity, like one thing that cued in for me is we have a wide disparity of legal differences from state to state. And what I'm seeing here is like presentations, you know, we may say, oh, it's this way in Texas, but refer to your local stuff. And there's a huge difference in how we prosecute, how you prosecute exploitation, trafficking, and abuse in this state versus that state versus that state. You know, and it's not like federal law that doesn't also completely change over the, you know, what's different than the states. And so there's a lot to be done locally, but how does that translate between the U.S. and then going elsewhere?
Oh, well, for example, I'll be in the U.K. next month. I've been asked to come to provide 4 days of training.
Wow.
They have, I think I'm right, 41 or 42 districts, and they kind of have an umbrella, the federal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Here in the U.S., there are, what, roughly 18,000 little kingdoms.
Yes.
Everybody's got their own way of doing
things,
own way of interpreting it. And
their own kings.
Yes.
And queens.
Absolutely.
And
that can be super difficult.
Right.
But, you know, you mentioned the laws. One of the things that really concerns me right now are things like the ADPPA privacy, which is important.
Yeah.
It is important because we don't want more people becoming victims.
Right.
But there are some issues that are coming in these things, and looking at like Clearview, I'll just throw Clearview out here. Love working with those guys. Last month alone, over 30 children we assisted in identifying over 30 children primarily through that tool.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
which, for those who don't know, in our listeners, Clearview is a facial recognition AI.
Facial recognition, yes.
Mention that.
And it's from open source. It's from, because I have some people that I will run their face live during a presentation. And I know what their privacy settings are on Facebook, Instagram.
Right.
Their privacy settings are set to private.
Yeah. Right.
They don't appear. Their stuff does not appear in Clearview searches. The people who do appear is who are just throwing their stuff out into the wilds of the internet.
Yeah.
You know, this is kind of a plain view thing for me. You know, you're thinking the old school stuff.
Right.
But I don't want to mention any countries. So there's a country that's advanced that have privacy laws that resulted in this. There was a predator posing as a teenager who got a lot of children to self-generate child abuse material,
right,
to take pictures of themselves doing things and, you know, sure, whatever he would guide them to do. So you're looking at that's a massive influx of first generation CSAM, child sexual abuse material.
Yep. Yeah.
And I don't call it child porn.
Correct.
Absolutely not.
Amen. Thank you for validating what we've been preaching for 3 years.
See, now you know why we preach it.
Yes, because that is not pornography. It's the rape of children.
Absolutely.
Very simple.
1,000%.
So this guy that they arrested was also he was communicating with predators also, over 240 of them. So there are over 240 predators. And their faces are right there, and the faces of children are right there. Law enforcement has exhausted everything they can do, and they are not allowed to use tools like ClearView because of privacy. We have to protect the privacy of these child rapists. What about the rights of the children?
Yeah,
so
the
I think we need
raping,
to have this
right?
conversation, especially here,
right,
that you know we need. They have rights too. Technology, double-edged sword, two sides
yes,
of the coin,
is.
Whatever you want to say.
Right.
Everybody wants their free apps,
right?
But we also want privacy. I want my free stuff. I want to be able to take selfies and tell the world how great I am.
Yeah.
But then say, no, you can't use it. You
know, yeah.
You can't use
right.
that.
I think.
Well, and people use it. It's not. They call for a balance. Those people go, we need a balance, and
right.
but they don't. You know, it's like, well, if I want to do it, then I should be able to do it. You can't limit me. But when I don't want you to, I want to limit that. And
right.
and we see that conversation.
You don't get your cake and eat it, too. That's just, that
right.
shouldn't
yeah,
be
yeah.
how it should be. You know, and having worked, I've worked an international case where I think there were some issues like that on the side in the country that I was working in. And the case being a victim here in Texas with a suspect in another country.
Right.
And there were some issues. And so between the two law enforcement agencies and the parallel investigation, we were able to overcome some of those
right.
particular issues, which I know here for U.S.-based investigators, they tend to think, oh, gosh, I can't do anything. It's outside the borders of the U.S. I can't
right.
do anything. Well, yes, you can. And there are some things, and it seems intimidating and like Mount Everest, but you can climb the damn mountain. Like just mm-hmm. get the step and you can get over it. And,
yeah.
and you can. And it's amazing when you do that, because what you just mentioned was very, very ring very true with what happened in our case with
right.
Victims all over the globe. You know, the guy worked on a cruise ship for 10 years and everywhere there was a port
right.
and the very same similarity with like-minded offenders sharing credentials. This guy has a story and a shtick that's working. Like, hey, come on in, yeah. weirdo. You're like-minded like me. Use my stuff. I already got a pool of people that will do things and
right.
self-harm and carve and
right.
all the horrible things.
And I know the UK has had, they've been having a conversation. I know there was a group, and it's probably on your LinkedIn as well as it is the other ones that I've read, where this group has called out, well, the privacy, there's no way for, without violating privacy things, for tech companies to be able to monitor for these things. And wisely, some of the professionals like you and others in the field have come out and said, I'm not saying you said it, but people have said, no, that's not true. There are ways to do this. And I don't know if you're chimed in with some of those arguments and kind of, because I guarantee some of the parents listening haven't heard these things, but about
right.
these groups that are putting out, you know, that, well, tech companies monitoring violate this and there's no way for it to do it without, you know, 20 or 30 years from now, maybe, but you know, those kind of arguments have come into the world, right?
Right. So the tech companies, you know, we were talking earlier, this is unprecedented. What parents have to deal with right now
yeah.
is we've obviously never had anything like this. Technology companies provide important services. They provide, you know, well, I guess that's arguable, but you know, for most people in modern society,
some important.
They provide something of value, but they're also, and again, this is the double-edged sword. We want all the good stuff.
Yeah.
But there's also the bad stuff. It's like Tor, the Onion browser,
yep.
the dark web.
Yeah.
Vital for people in certain countries to
sure.
be able to communicate and to know what's going on with the rest of the world and to you know, communicate safely.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the very nature of the dark web hides
yeah.
people. It allows bad guys to do bad things and
the
hide
most
themselves.
Vile material known to man
right.
is
with relative impunity and in in their minds, at least for sure.
Yeah.
But somewhat true, because they know, like, I can do this kind of very openly. There are people flaunting how open it is. But
But we have, like, we'll pick on Facebook. It's a biggie, you know, Meta. We have so many cases coming through because predators are using, they're using all of them. You know, let's just be honest here.
Right.
I used to, when we had time, when we identified a predator known, I mean, it's confirmed.
Yeah.
We knew their usernames. We knew their emails. We knew who they pretended to be.
Correct.
And we would go back to see what was their footprint. Where were they using this persona? And we would see them on homework sites. We would see them on, you know, and if you're a modern teenager, and if you're looking at running away, you're going to be on a runaway, a subreddit for runaways or Discord for runaways.
Yes.
And these communities do exist. These predators are in there. How do you identify them? I don't know, but I think that if you are a tech company that's making billions of dollars or more through all of this stuff, if you can, we know through AI what they're capable of doing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It is definitely doable within their system to find predators, and I think it is their responsibility.
Yeah,
if you are going to profit and substantially profit off of all the stuff that you're selling, the services you're providing, you have responsibility, because we only get one shot at childhood.
Right.
Exactly. In this generation right now, 1,000%. We can't wait until they grow up to try to save their childhood. You got to save childhood right now.
Yep, absolutely.
And they have a huge responsibility. They don't allow us just to go, you know, rummaging through their system, and we don't understand the system. They do.
Yeah,
and I think they have a responsibility to keep our kids safe.
Yeah. I won't put you on the spot with it. I want to say Sonya Ryan has come on.
Yeah.
And she said that to us, too. She's a friend of ours, and so I don't think she'll mind us quoting her, where she said tech companies, platform, social media could eradicate child exploitation material on their platform today.
If they chose. Yep.
If they chose.
I don't know if you know who Sonya is, but her daughter was the first teenager in the history of Australia to be groomed online by a predator and murdered.
I do know. Okay.
She was a keynote here several years ago, and a very, very dear friend of ours.
She's vocal about it.
Absolutely vocal.
They can wipe it.
Yeah. And what she's turned that tragedy into is just being an advocate and a voice, you know, based off her daughter. And she does not hold back. And it's refreshing to hear, but not enough people hear it. We literally got an email yesterday through our own task force that said, gear up, because that platform that you just mentioned is dumping 1 million new cyber tips today.
Right.
And so get ready. And so there's so many factors in place, and just there's so much inconsistency across the board with what information is provided, what is not provided. It's very, very frustrating from where we sit as active duty cops working the job and, you know, playing the games online to get these predators. But it's a passion I think nobody ever forgets. And once it's in your blood system, it never leaves. And you're clear evidence of that, going from military to, you know, federal law enforcement to prosecuting. And so let's talk what you're doing. You said a little bit, and I don't know what we can give out or what you want, whatever you're comfortable giving out.
No, working with a few NGOs, Raven. I'm on the board of Raven.
Love that. I just talked to what she came by while he was presenting.
Debbie.
Debbie did. And
oh, Debbie,
Yeah, we did a whole episode with Debbie.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I got Brandon some stickers right there from them. We did a sticker swap. So she was giving us a lot of good information. I didn't know I didn't know you were one of the nine, I guess, that formed it.
Right. I did, because we've been, I think, a little fanboying towards
Raven.
Yeah,
we have.
And saying, like, the work, and, you know, having gone to the legislature here in Texas, we tried to change the term child pornography legally to child sexual abuse material and to close loopholes and all of that stuff. But to see the policy, the legislative changes, the push towards almost a national campaign to stop this thing, we fanboyed a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much stuff. And imagine, look at, and what is the war on drugs? What is that, $500 billion?
Right. Yeah.
We've been fighting that thing for 40 plus years.
Exactly.
You know, did Debbie tell you how much ICAT gets in this country?
She didn't give me direct numbers, but she made some, you know, suggestions that, hey, you guys, through your efforts and the lobbying and communications, have been able to get more monies allocated and stuff like that. But no direct numbers.
For the fight against internet crimes against children, ICAT, for this fight, they get $60 million divided amongst all of them.
Everybody.
Yeah. Versus the drug one was
I'm throwing this out there. I think it's like 500 billion. I don't know.
It's huge.
Astronomical number. Yeah. I knew you know that.
If we could just take 1 billion maybe and shift it over.
How about 1% of that?
That would be great. Yeah. We've got to increase funding for the people that are on the front lines.
But you know, the benefit of what you guys are doing, and she gave me the whole concept, you know, like what people, and I said, well, tell me about the organization. She's like, we have one person in the organization who gets paid. That's it. And everybody else volunteers. And we are a organization of doing this and implementing changes, making it better for ICAGS and all things across the board. And how important that is, because what little information, like I shared with her, was we have this much knowledge based on what we did in Texas and what a machine that is.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be a billion times worse on the national level.
We can't do politics is what we learned.
it's tough. So consider this. How about child sex dolls?
The fight. And
how
can
this be hard to get legislation, to get it passed?
Amen.
We put that, we did a Facebook event, live event, and we're talking about child sex dolls and legislation for it. And the only comment we kept getting from listeners was like, how are child sex dolls a thing?
Yeah.
And so people don't know that that's a thing.
No, they don't.
Yep. Arizona just passed that law. Randall Snyder is right over there hawking one of his books or three of his books. And he was talking about how they just pushed that through in Arizona. And I'm like,
yeah, let's talk about it. I want to, for those listening, they don't know that that's even a thing. Yeah. And when they hear child sex doll, they're like, what the? Yeah.
Yes, that is exactly. So, look at what's coming through AI, the development of sex dolls.
Yep.
Just that is mind blowing.
Yeah.
But let's think about, if you want to have sex with a child, you can order a child sized sex doll. It looks like a child.
Height, weight, proportionate.
Yeah.
I've arrested a special ed school teacher that had one in a closet. I thought we found a real kidnapped kid. It was the scariest thing I've ever seen in my life.
I thought Tony sent me CSAM at 11:30 at night when he sent me a picture of that thing and went, what the hell did you just send me on my personal phone?
Right.
I just couldn't believe it. I was like, it was unfathomable. I've heard of them. I'd never encountered one. It felt like a real kid. Like if you touched it, it felt like skin. It weighed as much as a kid. Right. It was the height of maybe a 7-year-old. Yep. It was sickening. It was sickening.
It is.
So what's the fight? Why? I know people are sitting there going, that's a no-brainer. Why can't we stop that? What's the fight for that?
I think the fight is apathy. I mean, how do we get people engaged? Call your senator, call your congressman, call somebody.
Yeah.
Somebody take action, and we need to do this consistently. But there is a lot of apathy in this country that there's this dispersion. Kitty Genovese, somebody else will do it.
Absolutely.
Bystander effect.
Yeah. Yep.
I think we have a lot of that in this country that we expect somebody else to do this because I'm too busy with my free apps and my life. And I live in my little bubble and my kids are okay and my family's okay. So
not my kid in MK. And I think I don't want to be rude about it. I don't want to say it's ignorance, but it's lack of knowledge.
Yeah.
People are unaware that exists.
They
are. So the ones who don't know about it are like, I didn't even know. And the ones who do know are like, someone else, because it's not my kid that's going to happen to.
Yeah.
And then we get a few that it does, and then they become advocates, and it's a tiny voice versus what you're saying is everyone should.
I mean, child sex dolls. We put this out to a general vote, just the population as a whole, what do you think the results are going to be?
Yeah.
Should you be allowed to buy one of these and possess one of these?
Right.
All the offenders say yes, and everyone else says, fuck no.
Right.
Sorry.
No, that's exactly right.
Yeah. Hey, we're an explicit content podcast. You can say any words you want to. There's no problem.
I'll drop it because that's unheard. Unfathomable.
It's ridiculous.
And looking at AI, what about, so we just ran across some AI generated, turned out not to be CSAM, but it's coming. It's here. Right.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
So when we have, and you know Jim Cole, so we have people who are focused on victim ID, right?
Right.
What happens, and why is victim ID important?
Because we save the kids that are unrescued and unknown.
Absolutely.
That's right. So we're saving a real child who is being abused and raped on a regular basis and living this hell.
Yes.
What happens if you flood the system with AI-generated child abuse material without these kids? These aren't even real people.
You can't deal with the real kids because you're inundated with that.
Yeah.
And you're doing that on a $60 million a year budget that's divided amongst all of the ICAGs in this
your
country.
Time spent, everything's a time suck, and the time and the length of an investigation, the resources, the man hours, everything that'll go into something to figure out, shit, that's AI versus, you know, we missed the boat.
And then you've got the cyber tips. Flooded. They're flooded with cyber tips. Me. So you got a group of dedicated, amazing ICAC investigators who are trying to work as in totality in this country on $60 million that you've got to pay. Yeah. You got resources, you got tools, you got, you know, that money goes quick.
Oh, yeah. Tell us. We know.
It's a small population of people.
Yep.
They have to prioritize because there's a lawsuit, you know, that makes them prioritize instead of proactive. They have to prioritize cyber tips.
Correct.
We're getting a flood of cyber tips with a bunch of them being trash.
Yep.
That triage, that's eating up all their time.
Yep. Yes. Yeah, even the triage of the cyber tips that are flooding is a time suck in and of itself.
It is.
And a lot of officers like us, we're like Gilligan on the island. I'm on the island by myself. He's on the island by himself. And that's how a lot of agencies are. And we come from sizable agencies here in Texas.
And it's not like they have extra bodies to throw at everything. So we get it.
Everybody's drowning.
But I have to set aside 4, 5, 6 hours just to triage cyber tips each week. And you're right. There's no end to it. And honestly, what I'm worried about with the AI stuff, what I think is coming, is there's a whole legion of case law that has never been decided because it's such a new concept.
Well,
in that,
some countries have already outlawed it.
Okay.
Oh. We can't.
Because it's a freedom.
Constitutionally protected.
Okay.
So, how is this? And I've got the name of the case if you want it, but there's a case that prevents us from passing a law saying that AI-generated child sexual abuse material, we can't say it's illegal.
What's the law? I want to know the law. Not to put you on the spot, if we get it later, I just want to make sure that anyone listening goes, I'm looking that up because we're going to say something or know about it at least.
Ashcroft versus Free Speech Coalition.
I know that one.
You know that one, right? That's the one that's blocking. So how do we address that? Again, apathy. We need everybody, all of your listeners. We need more than all of your listeners.
Right.
And quite honestly, everybody who has any interest in the human race with a heartbeat should care about childhood. Yeah. What happens to this generation that grows up without childhood? And you know very well, childhood stops right when that abuse starts, right?
Yep. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
And the trauma does not.
No.
The trauma amplifies for the rest of your
life. It's a life sentence. What are you talking? It's a life sentence, as we all
Everybody
know.
Everybody should care about this. Everybody should.
And, you know, to be quite honest, I think the overwhelming majority of people would care about it if they had the knowledge of it.
Right.
And the question is, how do we bridge that gap? How do we do things like this? We align with organizations like you guys and Raven and all the others that are doing all the great work, but it still seems daunting at best. Like
it does. It feels like you're spinning wheels and not going anywhere.
Well, and that's why law enforcement, as you guys well know, you're never going to arrest your way out of this.
Well,
you're
not said that going, a bazillion times.
We have a before, during, and an after. So we're right in the middle of the during. We have to identify, locate, and rescue a child or a victim. Yeah. We have to identify, locate, and arrest a predator, right? Yeah. That's us. We're in the during phase. Right. What happens after? So I remember 20 years ago on SWAT team, you know, executing a search warrant, kicking doors, all the fun stuff that I used to love to do.
Right.
And I remember walking through the police lobby and looking over and seeing these kids and these victims over here and thinking, well, we just saved them. You know, we've given them a better life. And then you make the mistake one day of asking, follow up, say, what happened to those kids? What happened to those people?
Yeah.
And you find out you really didn't save them.
Right.
You did what you did that day, and some of them were worse off.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then so
some of them felt like I just wanted it to stop, but you upended my life.
Yeah. So the after, have you guys spoke to David Weiss? He's here. I've recruited him in a lot of stuff. He's a prosecutor here. Anyway, we need prosecutors. He is really, really good at victimless prosecution of human trafficking.
Okay.
Joe Remy, another great prosecutor on the ICAC side. Yeah. Robert Peters is here. We've got a lot of really good prosecutors who care and are willing to put more – to develop more training, to provide assistance. But look at the victims. So the survivors, victims, whatever you want to call them, the survivors, they're going to need substance abuse counseling, trauma counseling. They need job skills. They need job placement. They need child care help.
Yeah.
They need to have a life. We need to provide them with the ability to get this life back.
Yep.
Yeah. ACEs score needs to be fixed.
And that's got to happen at the community level. So a lot of the heroes out here are the ones that are there, they show up every day to work with these victims. Not us. We go, you know, we do the investigation, kick the doors, like, we're done, which is great and it's needed. But they're the ones that show up day after day after day.
Yeah. We talk about like that a lot.
We work harder in prevention and awareness, right?
Yeah. I was going to say that. I was going to mention, like, we see that a lot because we go train all over the country with different law enforcement groups trying to learn how to do what we're doing.
Right.
And we want to share that knowledge, but we try to temper the thing where we say, okay, be careful of the high five moment. It's nice when you get the guy and you bag the guy. But that's when your case starts.
Yes.
And that's when it really should begin. And that's when you should be doing all your due diligence.
That's the work.
And that's and that's where we see a lot of agencies lack because they just want that high five moment. And everybody's got this, oh, that was kick ass. Let's do that again. It's a good stat and feel good and the press release and all this shit. That's great. But do the follow up. Because if it's not for the follow up, you might miss something like I encountered with an international suspect with 10,000 victims.
Right.
And I don't want to go to sleep at night like that. I don't want to know that I'd left that out there hanging. Like, it's just crazy to me, some of the stuff that happens. And I know you're getting ready for a presentation shortly. We don't want to cut into any time. But other than Raven, what else do you got going?
So with Sentinel Foundation, they're starting to come out more.
Okay.
They are it's a group of primarily a lot of Delta Force guys. They've retired. Okay. They're in North Carolina, and they want to do something with that skill set that they have.
Yeah.
They're not investigators or prosecutors, but that's where people like me come in.
Yeah.
So I'm coming in and working with this amazing group. I've been out of the country with them 4 or 5 times already this year. This year, so they have been focused on other countries like Thailand, Africa, Colombia. I mean, a lot of important stuff. So we're going in and we're there with the federal law enforcement liaisons.
Right.
We're training military. We're training law enforcement. And in a lot of occasions, we're going with them.
Okay.
So a lot of these Delta guys, and I love the mindset of this group, that you don't have your job. Your job is never safe.
Right.
You have to show up every day and earn it. And that's kind of the mentality here of this group. And I love that.
Yeah.
Glenn Devitt is one. He helped me form the National Child Protection Task Force.
Okay.
He's one of the co-founders of Sentinel. And, you know, bringing all of this specialization together, and then you get law enforcement, prosecutors, guys like me, to come in and help them really fully develop the cyber investigation capabilities.
Sure.
That we go and help these other countries. We're also now helping, he's pushing into the U.S., so I'm helping them build that. Wow. So
nice.
One of the things we found with the National Child Protection Task Force, when you can get overwhelmed really, really fast.
Yeah.
So it's we actually need more people and more capabilities out here, so I'm helping build that.
Yeah.
But Sentinel Foundation, I can't say enough good things about them. Matt Murphy just left Operation Lightshine and had come over. Ryan Montgomery.
Okay.
Who's one of the number one hackers in the world.
Yeah.
He has a specific skill set. So I'm working with Ryan and Matt. And
is this
like the four horsemen coming together.
Sentinel the group where you wear the shirt says what, be a badass, so save a kid, or talk about that.
So the concept when I was talking before, during, and after.
Yeah.
You know, you got the during part.
Yeah.
You got the after for prosecution and victim. So that's only part of the part of the solution. You also have to think about before. How do we get left to boom and prevent this?
Yeah.
So this podcast is an outstanding example of one of those ways. All these lessons learned, we take that. It goes out to your listeners. How do we prevent?
Yeah.
Well, we got groups like Raven. So we see laws that are not working as intended. So Raven is able to collect all that and go back to Congress and say, this isn't working.
Right.
This is why. Here's how you can fix it.
Yeah.
Or go to the governors and say of each state, say, you know, this isn't working. Here's a suggestion on how to fix that.
Yeah.
But you also have things like NCJTC and W3C.
Right.
A lot of other academics that can take these lessons learned, package them up, take them back to train law enforcement, school nurses, community leaders, church, synagogues, temples. Anyway, so it's a more comprehensive package. And that was the MVP. And I got this from Tim Tebow. He was his talk last year. Sitting and listening, he said, you know, when I grew up, I always wanted to be a sports, you know, most valuable player and MVP, but now all I want to do is serve our MVPs, our most vulnerable people.
Wow.
So that's like, that's the name. So the MVP Task Force concept was born in that, you know, that, be a badass, save a kid.
Yeah.
That came from the Morgan Nick Foundation. So Colleen Nick out of Alma, Arkansas, her daughter, her child went missing. And I still remember, I was a cop at the time, went missing 25, 26 years ago.
Okay.
Still never found her, but she's not giving up.
Wow.
And she is an amazing lady doing amazing work. She helps families, missing anybody. She'll help anybody.
You know,
of course. We work a lot with them. But she was the one that gave me the shirt.
Nice.
At my conference last year. Yeah. And I started wearing it. And,
that's awesome.
That thing. And then Ben Owen, you know, with Flanders, he wore it. And it's just
I've seen it all over the place. And so are you guys able to use it for good and like sell it, make donations, or what are you doing?
Yeah, Morgan Nick Foundation has them. You go to their website and it's on there, but it's not. The ones that I had made up for my conference was the MVP Task Force concept. So we had like 17 NGOs that said, hey, we're all going to work together, mission-focused.
Right.
So we want the MVP Task Force to be a mission-focused organization, not an organization-focused organization.
Sure.
Yes.
And you mentioned Jim Cole, so I'm building this council of elders also that can come together to discuss, get the best people in child exploitation, human trafficking, technology, medical, education. You get all these people around to discuss this. You know, and Sentinel Foundation is part of it.
Right.
There's a lot of different organizations, but that's kind of where I've been going. But that was the origin of the shirt we made for the conference.
It's awesome.
And it has gotten a lot of attention. And it's
as it should. I mean, like, it can't be said any simpler than that, right? Nope. That it's just perfect. It just hits it to the key. And I would tell you, like, you know, I understand people need to be vetted and everything else, but you're looking at two dudes who are in the game for the rest of our lives. We will be in this game in some form or fashion forever. And if there's anything ever we can do to help, to contribute, to offer, to partner, whatever that looks like, you have two absolute fanboys right here. Willing to go in and dig deep.
We started this podcast with all of our extra free time, as you know, you often have, right? Just for prevention and education and awareness.
Because
that was part of our thing of, we're not going to arrest this to stop. No. So how do we, you know, and our issue has often been, we want to rescue those kids and get kids back to restoration.
Right.
But if we can just stop it from before it happens,
then
they don't have to worry about that trauma. That's where we want. And prevention is the absolute goal of this.
Well, the training the training is also a big, huge aspect of it too. So we too have worked with some NGOs and some not so good and some good, and we are certainly aligned with a good one right now, which happens to be across the way from us here, the Hope Foundation, and they do it for the right reasons.
Right.
And you know, listen,
I noticed he said too one thing, and the what you were saying about the Delta team and what you're doing. This is probably something people skipped over. You're liaisoning with the partners, the law partners there, because you understand, like, you can't go in rogue and do things because then you're just a criminal.
Yes. Right.
But you partner with them and give them the expertise and then help them.
Yeah, you see some of these organizations that'll go over and you know, they kind of made their name on, we go over and, we'll rescue a kid or two.
Yeah.
Well, that's great, but, you know, there's not a total system, the way of doing that. And as soon as they leave, though, they're back right back where they started. Sometimes it's worse off.
Yeah, definitely it wouldn't worse off.
So you have to improve the system. So that's one of the things with the Sentinel going to Thailand again this month. And we work directly with the Royal Thai Police. We're working directly with their leaders and the people who are on the ground executing those things. And you know, the two FBI agents that were killed. So we don't take personal safety, firearms training and all this and the child crimes. We really don't take it very seriously.
Right.
And we paid a price for that. Heavy price.
Yes, we did.
Yes.
So one thing I want to get these Delta guys doing, they've agreed to do some firearms training, some tactics and some of the stuff that they I was an air marshal and I worked out of, and we had a bunch of prior Delta Force guys, SEAL team guys that were doing our training. So I did 3 weeks of advanced close quarter and then another 3 weeks shooting several thousand rounds a day, you know, basics, you know, drilling all this stuff. And we were shooting probably 8 hours a week, which is a lot for law enforcement.
Right.
These guys, hours and hours and hours in the shoot house every day.
Every day.
Yep.
That skill set they've got and their ability to articulate and train, I want to take advantage of that to provide that training. They also have tremendous, they can train a lot of things, drones, surveillance. I mean, their skill set is amazing.
Covert.
And I think that's such an advantage, and that's kind of where, like, I know we feel like we have all this institutional knowledge.
Right.
And that's why I'm so hesitant to jump now.
Yep.
I'm a 30-year guy. I could retire tomorrow. It'd be no problem, be fine. But I don't want things to go away. I want to be able to pass this institutional knowledge on to someone else who's going to maybe learn how to do it better or, you know, improve on things as it goes. And we always want to stay relevant or whatever, but pooling all those resources together, man, that's as solid as it comes.
We know the institutional knowledge. So I told Jim Cole, John Rouse, that you guys are not going to escape. I get them roped into a lot of stuff, and they have been tremendous. They've been mentors to me in a major way. I've got a lot of mentors. I really believe in that. But the institutional knowledge, when Jim Cole, when those two left, when they retired, That would have been devastating. But yeah. Luckily, they've got Onimi. They're staying in the fight. OLS. Yeah. They're still in it, and they're still helping.
Yeah.
Actually, Jim and Glenn Devitt were pretty close friends. And, but with Sentinel, we fully know you cannot go kicking doors. We can do better.
Yeah, so absolutely.
And these guys are not showing up all macho and doing. They show up. They're very humble, very quiet, and they show up and say, "How can we help?"
Yeah.
And they listen to people like me because we're working in a law enforcement environment.
Right.
So I don't want people getting the feeling like this is another one of those special operations units that are.
Yes.
No, this is different. So they're actually coming in and saying, "Hey, how do we do this? How can you use our skills? Yeah. How do we put this together?" But your institutional knowledge is exactly that.
Right.
We pull from that.
Right.
So we reach out to people like Jim Cole, you guys who have all this experience. That's something we can't lose. And we have to stop losing it. We're hemorrhaging.
It changes, right? Because that's what I've seen. Even in 10 years of doing stuff, night and day difference between start to now.
Yeah.
And so what we're most fearful of is leaving and becoming irrelevant.
Right.
Because if you're out of it for a little while, you're not as up on it. And so we're staying. And that's what I think that brings is you've got this foundational to but they know the current and the most in, and they're forward thinking. And that's what I love.
Yeah. You guys got to combine all of that. Yeah. Everybody's got to listen to each other.
Yeah.
But that's vital.
Yeah.
We can't keep losing this experience. Like
we
do 50 first dates in law enforcement, right? It's a new world every day.
Yes, it is.
So you have somebody, a legend that's about to retire.
Yeah.
I would have somebody following him around, meeting everybody, understanding the network, understanding how they do things for, I would do it for years probably if I could.
Yeah.
But what do we do?
Hey, train this guy in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. Exactly. Right.
Show him how to get on your computer and go.
What size boots do you wear? Because he's going to fill in and wear yours now. Yeah. That kind of. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, we got to stop doing that. We need a transition period. We need something. And even after they're gone, we need to make use of that. And luckily, people like Jim and John, they're still there. If we called them and I said I need help, they're on. There's no hesitation, no problem at all.
And there's no better to call. Like there's no two better people.
Oh no, no.
Yeah. Jim and John Rouse. Right. I mean, they're legends, and they not undeservingly so.
No,
yeah.
No. Well, just great. And then the community like you guys, this is tremendous.
It sounds self-serving, but listen, if there's ever a need that we could ever help with. We are two more of those guys
call
us anything and everything. And
we'll just drop everything and come running.
We'll give you our information. And it's been an absolute honor and privilege to be able to speak to you. Like Brandon said, we've been kind of fanboying, watching from the distance and just, giving the thumbs up where it's accountable. Yeah. But anything and all that we can do, we are more than happy to help spread the word and raise more awareness and help raise funds. And this, believe it or not, again, we're not the Joe Rogans, but we reach a lot of people in a lot of countries, which has blown us away, thinking we would only have 30 or 40 listeners, but we absolutely have a crap load and beyond our own expectations. But we're in the fight for the right reasons, and anything we can do to help you guys in any way, shape, or form,
Going back to that shirt, be a badass, save a kid. People say, I'm 6'3", about 245 pounds.
Yeah.
Used to do MMA.
Right.
Shooting. All the macho stuff.
Right.
If you really want to be a badass, here it is. You want to be a badass? Save a kid. Save childhood. Do something. You can do that as a parent. You
absolutely
can do that if you're in a wheelchair.
Yep. Yeah.
None of this stuff matters. If you really want to be a badass, do something for somebody else.
I love it.
And I hope your listeners will take this to heart and actually start looking into these things that you guys are talking about.
Fantastic.
Because we need somebody to take action, and whoever's listening to this, it's got to be you.
Yeah.
And one last thing, I get asked about statistics a lot.
Yeah.
But we don't really ask questions. Like right now, how many foster kids are missing? Don't know.
Yeah.
But I've got the runaway loophole that I did. But when does it become statistically significant on these kids? And then that's when it's your kid.
Yeah, I was gonna say, that's exactly
so
right.
Hopefully
when you're the kid or when
it hits home.
Kid?
When it hits home, that's when the statistics matter because it's one and it's mine. And that's what we don't want. So your listeners, hopefully, when you get this out, they'll start paying more attention to what's going on around them, who their kids are around, and be a watchdog for everybody else.
I hope that anyone's driving is able to pull over before you're like high-fiving and like, because people are losing their minds right now listening because, I mean, that's firing people up,
You're preaching, you're on the pulpit, man, and you should preach it loud because we're huge supporters of it. We're advocates for it. How about any websites? What if we have a listener that's like, yeah, I'm going to start to do a little bit. I want to help these groups. I want to help. Is there any place they can go to get more information or donate or do anything?
Well, right now, again, we're talking about Sentinel Foundation. We're pushing that out. So, okay.
Is there a website or
FoundationSentinel.org?
FoundationSentinel.org?
Yep.
Okay. How about for the Raven side? What's
Raven. You know what? I should know that.
That's okay.
Raven.us.
Okay. Just Google Raven.
That is Raven.us.
Yeah, Raven.us.
And then if they want the badass shirts, it's the Morgan Nick Foundation. It's
Morgan Nick.
Just Google that. Morgan Nick Foundation. And look into Colleen. Colleen is an amazing lady doing some just tremendous work.
I'm going to look after this and see if they have a Clydesdale size.
Yes.
And if so, I'll be having one on. And if you don't mind, once we end, I know you got to go. Can we get a quick picture to
put great.
Out for social media? Would
Absolutely.
That be okay? Awesome.
Because when you see him, you're going to be like, dude, that guy's a badass already because he looks like a badass already. So,
yeah, they call me the Viking man or Kratos in the Dominican Republic. So I get that
I
a lot.
I can see that.
But that is my heritage, so I guess it fits.
Awesome. Well, Kevin, thank you, man.
Thank you, guys.
We're honored.
I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
Thank you for listening to the Catfish Cops podcast, brought to you by Brandon Poor and Tony Godwin. For additional information and available resources, please visit our website, www.catfishcops.com, and click on the resources link.